To meet these threats, Johnston spread his strength across a great arc, a sort of an inverted arc, with a big flat U, if you like, as an image, trying to protect the heartland of Kentucky and have a strong hold on Tennessee. Trying to protect the heartland of Tennessee with his flanks anchored in Kentucky. And this is how the line was laid out. The left flank was anchored at Columbus, Kentucky. 12,000 Confederates were there on that high, strong point on the Mississippi River. In command was Episcopal Bishop of the Southwest, Leonidas Polk. Polk was a man of very limited, he was a West Pointer, but a man of very limited military ability. As one discerning Confederate officer put it, God may have made a bishop in Leonidas Polk, but he did not make a general. I think that's a very accurate thumbnail sketch of Polk. Columbus, very strong position, heavily fortified. The Confederates gave a lot of attention to it because they thought it would block one part of Scott's Anaconda strategy, that is, movement down the Mississippi. That's the left flank for Johnston. The right flank was anchored on the Louisville and Nashville Railroad at Bowling Green, Kentucky. About 25,000 men were there. Those are the anchors. In between were two weaker positions, a pair of forts guarding the Cumberland and Tennessee rivers. On the Tennessee River was Fort Henry, and on the Cumberland River, Fort Donelson, up near the Kentucky-Tennessee border. Donelson was considerably stronger than Henry, but Albert Sidney Johnston didn't give much attention to either one of them, focusing instead on his flanks at Columbus and Bowling Green. Two final components of the Confederate forces in the West were a small army under General Earl Van Dorn that was operating in Arkansas, but might be expected to move to the eastern side of the Mississippi River at some point, and an even smaller one near Cumberland Gap, commanded by an officer named Felix Zollicoffer. So that is the defensive posture of Albert Sidney Johnston, a vast area and a huge line to defend it. Let's look very quickly at the advantages that each side enjoyed. And this will just be very, very quick. Let's start with the Confederates. The Confederates had an excellent railroad that moved behind a good deal of their line, which would give them a good opportunity to shift strength back and forth. There was a line that ran from Memphis past Forts Henry and Donelson to Bowling Green, Kentucky. Gave them interior lines, would have allowed them to shift strength from Bowling Green to either of the forts or to points farther west along their line. The Confederates also benefited from the fact that Johnston was in overall command. He didn't have to consult with someone else. He didn't have to try to make sure that whatever he did conform to what someone else was doing. He was in command. He could decide what the strategy was. He could move units around as he wanted to move them. He could make decisions. He could act decisively. Potentially, he could do those things. So that is another strength for the Confederates. Unified command. The Federals had the advantages of numbers. There were far more Federal soldiers in this theater than there were Confederate soldiers. Between Halleck and Buell, they commanded far more men than Johnston did. And of course, they had the advantage of those wonderful avenues of advance. I keep hammering on that as a strength, but it really cannot be overstated because rivers were so crucial as avenues of advance, and the Louisville and Nashville Railroad was a splendid one as well. So those must be reckoned major Union advantages. Numbers and the four avenues of advance. Now let's shift to the first great Union offensive in the Western Theater, and it would turn out to be the first successful major Union military operation during the war. Halleck and Buell looked at the map, looked at the situation, and they both understood that the weakest point in Albert Sidney Johnston's long line was in the middle, where the line dipped down and ran through Fort Donelson on the Cumberland and Fort Henry on the Tennessee River. These were both in Halleck's department. So he formulated a plan to take these forts and have the force that succeeded in capturing the forts drop south and cut that railroad that ran from Memphis to Bowling Green. So not only would he get the forts, but he would deny the Confederacy those interior lines that they had. That would, reasoned Halleck, split Albert Sidney Johnston's defending forces into two pieces, the piece over on the Bowling Green end of the line and the piece on the Columbus, Kentucky end of the line. It would allow the Federals then to concentrate on either one of those and to defeat them in detail.